You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek: The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Phantasms. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And we were going to have a guest on, but as it turns out, life happens. And our guest was not able to join us because of a death in a family friend, I believe, is what I may have gotten out of that. So we do want to give our condolences to Mark, who is not able to join us because of that. And then next week he's too busy to do anything. So instead of putting it off 3 weeks, we just have to continue on. And he said to go on. You know, Mark's the boss. Mark says go on, we're going to go on. But anyway, James, how are you again?
Oh, all good. And actually, talking about Christmas, yes. The family and I sat down and watched our first Christmas film of the year yesterday. So everyone is getting ready for Christmas.
That's right. And I forgot to mention that last week that we started recording on Sunday now.
Yep.
And that's good information for people to know, because my wife uses my computer, my production computer, Monday through Friday now for her work. So we're not going to be able to record any of those days unless she's off. And trying to coordinate a guest for a day that she may or may not be off is pointless. So we're going to have to let that go. But so what we're going to record on Saturday and Sunday. And James, you said you do movie night on Saturday, and you found that you had to try and get it done quick, scurry him off to bed, and come record, which, honestly, I wish you had told me that. That's unacceptable. We would have figured out something.
Hang on a second. After having spent the entire day with these little monsters and a movie night, I am more than happy to shoo them off to bed as early as I can. There's certainly no worry on that front. But we started the Christmas movie season. But by the way, I don't think that there's a better Christmas film than Elf. And I might fight people over that. Have you seen Elf?
Lou? Oh, yeah, absolutely. When I was working at Nebraska Furniture Mart and Security, they put Elf on somewhere around November. It's retail, and they were trying to plug the movie or something, and it's Christmas, give everybody in the Christmas spirit. So a television set that was right next to our security desk was playing Elf nonstop.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, you can say that I've watched Elf many times, and that, you know, that goes back to what, 2002, I think.
Oh, it's don't say it's a 20-year-old film. That'd be ridiculous. No, it can't be because it can't, can it? Okay, let me just check. 2003, blimey. Oh, dear.
Oh, see, yeah, there you go. I started there in 2003 in security.
Yeah.
And like I said, eventually I moved from the furniture store over to the patrol, outdoor patrol. Then I moved into the appliance and electronics. And that was, I want to say, late 2003, maybe 2004, till I went into loss prevention and was surveillance for the next 11 and a half years, which... Still miss it. I miss it. I feel like I wish I can go back home, but I can't. I'll never be able to go home again. It's the way it is. But I remember it being on that monitor all the time. even into January, they just played it over and over and over. So, but anyway.
It's a good film.
It really is. I think he did a very good job on it.
Yeah, and things that all of the kids watch it and all of the kids enjoy it. And so we've got, the youngest is 5 and the oldest is 16, and they are, they will like it. And this particular time, for some unknown reason, all of the kids found it hilarious. Where, when they invite the writer, the outside writer in order to help them with the book, and he's the short guy. And he does the "call me elf one more time, you're an elf." And they found that hilarious as he's being beaten up by this guy.
Right. It's okay. It's a good movie. But of course, calling somebody an elf today in today's culture is probably not good, at least over here, because it's just one more thing that someone somewhere is going to be offended about. It'll happen. It'll happen. Okay. Yeah. Oh, like, for instance, we went today to a place called Dunkin' Donuts. I don't know if you have it over there.
We have like 3 of them.
Okay, but good.
It's not big.
Well, yeah, they're pretty big over here for their coffee. But they have a donut my wife loves called Munchkins. And they're basically donut holes. That's all they are. But after we got them, we drove away, and I said, something? I'm surprised I can get away with calling these Munchkins. Why? Well, think about it. Is it an offensive to short people?
But aren't Munchkins specifically from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? Or did he appropriate the term from elsewhere?
I'm thinking The Wizard of Oz. Also called a Munchkin.
I think it was in there. Okay, I'm not sure.
Called? I don't remember. Yeah, they represent the Lollipop Guild. But anyway, so I'm thinking, Munchkins makes it sound like...
Oh, no, by the way, you're completely right. It is Wizard of Oz. I was thinking I was wrong.
Yeah, so I mean, it was a movie made in 1930-something, and they called them Munchkins, and I'm surprised people ain't freaking out about that. But I don't know, this world, people just are, I call it professionally offended. Professionally offended. But anyway. Or no, professional victims is what I call those. Professional victims that, obviously find every little possible thing and be offended by it.
I was about to say that we're about to start now and are we going to be professionally offended by this episode of Star Trek?
Well, that depends. If you try to turn someone into a cake, I could see a problem there. Okay, so let's go on with Phantasms. This is the 6th episode of Season 7 of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was first aired on October 25th, 1993. Written by Brannon Braga, directed by Patrick Stewart. Oh, man. Now I feel bad.
Didn't notice that. I must have... So I noticed that it was Brannon Braga. And almost when I saw that, now watching this show with, many years later, you think, yeah, that's probably right. But I didn't catch the Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. What was Patrick thinking?
Directed?
Brannon. It's Brannon. That's why. But starts with Brannon, ends with Patrick. I don't know. I got to look at other things because, quite frankly, I don't remember other in the past that I said was directed by Patrick Stewart. So have there been many?
I think maybe about 5 or so. All in all, I think. In TNG, I don't think much more than that.
Here we go. Directorial. He did, in theory, Hero Worship, A Fistful of Data's, Phantasm, and Preemptive Strike. So.
Okay, so when I said there were 5, and there's exactly 5.
Yeah.
That's not bad, is it? I haven't said this right. He does Data episodes. So in theory, it's a Data episode. Hero Worship's a Data episode. Mm-hmm. Fistful of Datas is obviously a day trip. So then Phantasms 2. Now, the only one that's the odd one out is Preemptive Strike, which I don't recall any data thread through it, which I'm sure there isn't. Mm-mm. But he's maybe he's been typecast as a data director.
That could be. That could be. A data director. I'm sorry, I had to move my phone over. It was making my headset make that sound. And I was afraid it'd go into the microphone. So, okay, anyway. That's who it was written by, and that's who it was directed by. So let's talk about guest stars. How about Michelle, son of a gun. Here, I looked up Preemptive Strike.
That has Michelle Forbes.
Yes, it does, but not Phantasms. She's not anywhere in this one. You know, it makes you wonder where she's been through this whole season. But anyway, Gina Rivera as Tyler.
Okay, Bernard, why was she in the episode?
No, she wasn't.
What did she... Tyler. What was the point of Tyler? I mean, literally, that character. What? She was there for, like, what, 30 seconds? Contributed nothing? What was that?
Oh, no, she did contribute something. And, and I'm taking notes on what she was doing, especially with LaForge. She did some things, and we'll get to her.
Okay.
Bernard Cates as Sigmund Freud, or in this case, Sigmund Fraud. Clyde Kusatsu as Nakamura, and David Crawley as Workman. He must have been the only one that talked, I guess. That's pretty much what I must be getting from that.
Yeah, I think that's the way they do it.
Yeah, because I don't even see any references to the other workers, even not in the uncredited. Which, by the way, uncredited is Brandy as Spot. Spot's a girl. Why do they do that? Why do they change the sex of animals in Star Trek? Because Porthos was very clearly a girl.
Okay. I've heard this thing about Spot being a girl. Now, but was previously a boy. But also, wasn't it like also a different species as well? I mean, I'm not really a cat guy and I don't keep track of the cats. But when people say, oh, it's a boy, is that because Data refers to the animal as a he? Or is it that there are, that you get a glance between the legs?
Well, it's hard to notice a cat unless you really are looking.
Okay.
But, I'm trying to look. I'm trying to spot here through Memory Alpha. Spot, get it? Ha ha. And Memory Alpha to try and determine what Spot was at each point. But I do believe you're right that they were different cats. Just like there were different Porthos either, too.
The big one with Spot is that Spot's then pregnant, right? At some point.
That's right. Spot did get pregnant. So,
in fact, she gets pregnant in a couple of episodes from now. So there's no ambiguity there.
Okay. I may have blown right past that when he was handing him to Worf. That might be one I'm going to have to look into as to whether Spot was a boy or a girl. And what he said, she or he.
No. So in this episode, he says he.
Okay.
He says he all of the time in this episode. But it's not necessarily the case, that Data might just be saying he because he just says he, right? It doesn't need to be, biologically a cat that can't, a cat that is a male cat.
Actually, I just found something on Memory Alpha. Just like they do with children, they do them in pairs.
I'm sure. If not, like dozens of them.
Right. So actually, Spot today is played by Brandy, Bud, and Monster.
Okay.
Well, hey, sometimes
did they have to share the paycheck?
Probably. You know, vittles for you, vittles for you, vittles for you. But you're the one I like the most, so you get more about it. Yeah, what were they like at the crab service table? Craft service table. Did they get more food? So, anyway. So what do we think about Phantasms? Well, it was probably more interesting to talk about Spot and who plays Spot than it was to talk about Phantasms. My initial thought is, other than enjoying a big piece of Deanna Troi cake, I can't imagine this one got past the drawing board. And here, and seeing that this was actually directed by Captain Picard himself, is kind of sad to me in a sense, because
Okay, Lou, it's not that bad, okay?
No, it's not that bad.
There are a couple of reasons why it's not that bad. Okay, but before I start, it is terrible, but
it's not that bad.
But this, I mean, how many times have you heard people refer to a cellular peptide cake with mint frosting? So that got out of this episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone knows that. And when I say everyone, I mean, you know, the very small slice of Star Trek nerds that listen to us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everyone knows cellular peptide cake, although in you know, I don't want to undo my point here, but also people do know the, useless bags of mostly water, which also came out of a terrible episode. And then the other great thing in this episode is the, can you look after my cat? You have to tell me there's a good cat and a pretty cat. He's like, I will feed him. That's, I use that with my wife and my kids because they tell me to look after our cats. And I will not do things to the cat other than feed them. At the absolute most, I'll feed them. But that's fun, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose it is. Yeah, but...
Not enough for the 45-minute episode?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, yeah, fine. Seeing... And Worf's hands, the way he goes around the cat, almost looked like he was trying to kill it. But still, no, it's not enough to justify an entire 45 minutes of production, or actually a week's worth of production for that. There was so much imagery, though.
Yeah, but what about the great thing right at the end when Troi comes along and it's like, ha-ha, look what I've got. I've got a data cake. You know, that's great, isn't it?
But that was a god-awful cake. Compared to the Deanna cake, the Deanna cake was kind of sexy.
Yeah.
You know, Deanna's kind of sexy. Well, but the data cake. Oh, come on. Deanna's got she's got curves on her.
I don't have anything against Deanna. I'm just saying that, you know, if I had to choose between Troi and Troi cake, I'd take Troi.
Well, okay, yeah. You got me on that one. But what I mean is, the one she made for Data...
It looked like a four-year-old had made it.
Yes.
Or at least it had been made with a four-year-old doing the cutting out. Yeah, I agree with you there.
It looks like just a hollow tree that's got a decoration on it. It looked terrible, but her cake, on the other hand, that looked soft and moist, just like her, soft and moist.
That's a disgraceful statement.
I can't help it. I mean, like when she was on the bio bed, with that mouth thing that, you know, where Data stabbed her, and there, you know, the little thing comes off and it looks like she's got a rash. I mean, hey, mm-hmm. I don't know what you saw. I don't know what you were looking for or what you noticed, but I saw a little side boob and became, you know, like, there we go. That looks good to me.
Are you a guy that was sitting there saying, Data, you should have stabbed lower, lower?
Well, what I don't understand is it looks like he stabbed her at least twice. Where are the other cuts? Unless he knew exactly
but the cuts weren't there, right? So the cuts were healed, and what was remaining was the unconnected, So Crusher was able to take care of the cuts, multiple cuts, dependent. It doesn't matter how deep.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's get on, because
we are on.
This is a car crash of an episode, But there are certain like scenes, and there are certain like lines of dialogue, and there are certain like things that happen that you think, oh, there's something there. And if it wasn't so much of a car crash, it might. I'm stretching to say it might work. I don't think it would work, but there are things I enjoy about it. At least I'll put it that way.
So you went from it's not that bad to it's a car crash to there's certain things I'll enjoy about it. That's
Hang
fascinating.
On, Luke. Have you ever seen a car crash and you've turned around and go, it's not that bad? I mean, there are degrees of car crash, right? There was a car crash just down the road the other day on my way to school. And kind of the front was a bit mashed in and it didn't look like you could get out the door. But it wasn't that bad. No one died.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a good car crash then. Something simple and nobody gets hurt. Which one is this, though? Did somebody get hurt in this car crash in this episode? I mean, Deanna got hurt.
Well, yes, she got stabbed in the shoulder.
Good. So this was not a good car crash. Aha! There, I got that out of you. No, but no, you know something? I kind of like the way we've been doing the podcast for the last 2-3 episodes where it's not necessarily an act by act by act by act by act. Just talk about what we see. I still have each act by act, and as we go along, I can pull out what happened. But, okay, so this episode here has a lot of imagery that you've got to really focus on to understand how it interacts with the other. You get what I mean? The work guys trying to tear apart the warp conduit. It almost looked like they were trying to just hit CGI because they weren't causing any damage. They weren't really hitting anything. They just seemed to be slamming a hammer or a pick or something, right?
Yeah, mildly moving a pick towards a piece of plastic.
Right. Yeah, don't hit it too hard. You're going to break it. We can't afford that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start over. The Enterprise has a new warp core, right? Geordi LaForge himself, I guess, built it or put it together. He installed it. I got the impression that these people, these beings that were part of the warp core, did they accidentally get snagged into this plant of this thing? Or is this something that was there the whole time? Were they really trying to kill everybody on board? Kill them all? Or were they trying to keep themselves alive? What did you get from this?
Okay, so this is a weird one because this isn't the first time that there are a bunch of creatures that are alive that are caught in the ship that are causing trouble, right? Evolution had them with the nanites. Mm-hmm. Yep. We've had them with the saline solution. We've had it with even with quality of life, right? With the what did you call them? The exobots?
Exocomps.
You know, you have a lot of this stuff where you don't notice that there's life somewhere, and you go, oh, and usually the way that Star Trek does it is that it kind of dances around the fact that, oh, you know, we're both equally as worthy to have life, and you have to be aware of these things, and and how do you start now communication with the life forms that have taken over the ship, and it's all been a mistake, and let's communicate with them. In this episode, it's not quite like that. In this episode, it's like, yes, there are bad things going on. We don't know if they are really malevolent, but let's exterminate them. And I hadn't seen this episode for a long time, and I was thinking, oh, they're leaving it a bit late to do the let's talk to the aliens, and then the aliens will disappear and become nice and stuff. And of course, it just doesn't happen. Hmm. We just have an infestation of vermin, effectively here, that we notice. The idea of kill them all seems to be Data's humane algorithm coming forward, that this is the way forward, and at no point does anyone question whether or not we should exterminate this infestation, which is fine in a way, but it goes against a lot of other episodes of Star Trek, right, where we have always been told that you don't just wipe out the nanites with, you know, with the radiation just because they're in your way.
Right.
And I found that interesting. I mean, I don't think it's interesting. I don't think they're doing it on purpose. I think they just ran out of time and they didn't have, you know, they weren't interested in doing that story this week.
Mm. What confused me was the Sigmund Freud character when he's like, kills them all. Who's he saying to kill? The alien being things? Or is he telling the alien beings to kill all humans on board the Enterprise? Because obviously, if they destroy the warp core... But they weren't destroying the warp core. That was imagery, right?
I don't think the infestation was after the warp core. I think it was just that...
It was on the people.
It was on the people. They were eating their stuff. I kind of got the impression that Freud was saying to kill them all. I think Data was interpreting it as he needs to kill, you know, the crew, at least initially. But then he realized, oh, it's not kill the crew. It's kill this infestation. But, I mean, is that a particularly... I don't know. I don't feel like... Data goes on a particularly long journey here. So he starts off with some people who are trying to, you know, trying to sabotage the warp core or whatever. They're seeing things on people's faces like a straw. And then he ends it by going, oh, I know what I need to do. I need to just scream at them and then they'll go away. Uh-huh. It's like, okay, well, that's the entire arc of this episode. You kill rats with rat poison. That's basically the story this week.
Yeah. But, you know, that's a good point. I mean, really, he opens his mouth, a shrieking noise comes out, they don't like it, they make him stop. And that's when they realize, well, that's the way to kill him, is to make that shrieking noise a lot louder.
And the thing is that, you know, effectively, Data has the solution from the first teaser of this episode as to how to solve the problem. And all that we have in this episode is we actually don't really have much narrative either, right? The situation is as bad as it is at the end, it is at the beginning, right? There's no, you know, maybe there's an impression that things are getting worse, maybe it's spreading, but we're not given like a ticking clock, right? That we have to do this by this time, otherwise the ship explodes or anything like that. I mean, the closest you get is the slight embarrassment of being late to the Admirals. So you're not thinking you need to do something now and time is dripping away.
No, actually there is.
Oh, do you? Really?
Absolutely. Well, what Crusher was saying is that if we let these things continue eating on us and getting rid of our cellular peptides, next thing you know, we're just going to be a few pounds of sand on the ground.
No, she did say that. So it's not as if they can leave this there forever. But what I mean is that there's no final third of the episode where they're racing against time in order to do something just before, you know, a barrier comes down or just before the warp drive explodes or just before, you know, there's no like scene with in the Naked Now where they have to like put the isolating your chips back in time and otherwise, you know, they can't warp out. There's none of that. So in a way, you know, no one dies in this episode either. There's as much threat in the teaser as there is in the final climax. And it just feels like all that you have through the journey is this imagery of dreams. You have the story about why is, you know, what does Data mean, what does he see when he dreams and all of that. I kind of felt that narrative was a little bit too one-dimensional, right? It didn't feel like, you know, did Data really learn much about himself? Did we learn more about Data by having experienced his dreams? I'm not convinced that we did. You know, to me it felt like the teaser was, there's a problem, here's the solution. And then the entire episode was, oh, Data's a little bit perplexed because he's having nightmares and eventually he's going to realize that he's been given a solution. And he's been given both the solution and the problem, right? Because at the beginning, we don't even know there's a problem. And I think a lot of this is like more style than substance. You know, I don't see there's any need for... I don't feel like there's any need for this to be dragged out in the way that it is. And I don't think there are that many twists, right? What's the twist this episode? What's the you know, what did we not see coming? I don't know. I think everything was pretty straightforward and plodding. Mm-hmm.
Did you find the ringing telephone to be a nuisance and really not germane to the plot at all?
I think a lot of the things were similar to that. So I think that the teaser in particular, you know, I would, you know, they revisit elements from the teaser. I kind of think it's a little bit, yeah, I thought it was like tedious, to be honest. The idea of, we're going to have, you know, two or three bits of imagery that you reuse. You've got the clock, the ringing that you reuse. And you've got the work people that you reuse. And at no point did I think that, I didn't feel like you were, that anything was being built on top of it, right? So what's the point of the you know, other than it being something, what's the point of the phone? I mean, if it wasn't that, if it was something else. And also, what's the point of the phone being inside Data?
Yeah.
Is that important? What does that add? If it was a phone on the side, would it be any different?
No.
And that's why I think it's a little bit of style over substance. And I think that you can do stylish things, but I think that they need to, you know, I think this is only style. So the only reason to have the phone was for style. The only reason to have the cake, I mean, the cake is slightly nice, better, I think. I think they do okay on cake. But the idea of the straw and the idea of the... straw out of Riker's head, the idea of the workmen. I just think it's all a bit, you know, style over substance. I don't think you need much. I don't think adds much.
Hmm. Okay.
It's still good.
Yeah. It's still good. It's still good. Yeah. What do you think about the... Did you notice the way that they shot the hallway scene at the beginning as Data is just kind of strolling along?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seemed like it was very it was very different, the style of camera.
Yeah.
Where they did that, you know, to make they obviously they were making it like a dream, but you obviously don't realize until Data wakes up. And I thought, I don't remember ever seeing a bed in Data's quarters.
Yeah, so actually also at the beginning, they also have the thing where he walks up to Geordi, and Geordi's not reactive until you get to him. It's a bit like a video game. You have to walk up to the character, and then he comes alive, and he says three words, and then you walk on. I found that, I mean, it's fine, right? It's stylistic, but I would have, I think that you need to have a payoff on this front, and I just don't think they did have. And then you get into, I mean, what you're starting now is the nitpicking discussions of why does Data have a bed? Why does he got covers? Why does he get into bed in his suit and probably his, I imagine his shoes as well.
Yeah.
Why has he got a cat? Where's the litter tray? I mean, all of this stuff is nitpicky, which I can usually overlook, but it's a little bit silly.
Well, in this case, you know, Even when they figure out Data had a nightmare, and live with that dream for a little bit, see what you come up with it. And he goes back to bed, and it's so cheesy. I actually laughed out loud when he went, ugh, puts his arms up.
Yeah,
you gotta be kidding me. But he goes to bed. He lays down in his boots, no less, and. And he goes to sleep instantly. And I thought, well, okay, maybe I'm just jealous, you know, because how long does it take for me, you know, twisting and turning and circling around the bed to try and finally get some sleep? I do not go to sleep fast at all. My wife, 5 minutes. We'll turn the TV off. She'll turn her head. Next thing I know, I hear... I think, oh my gosh. You can literally watch a dog fall asleep within 10 seconds. But yet, I sit there and I toss and turn. Am I jealous much? Yeah. Okay. So he's walking through the hallway and he comes across LaForge. And, you know, hey, this is going to be a great day. As he walks off. we're going to start this new warp core. Let's start it up. And as soon as they start it up, what happens? Nothing. We're just sitting there. And the poor ensign that's, you know, trying to engage the warp drive.
Okay, so there are a couple of things I have to say about this ensign. Because I only found out a couple of weeks ago that she never talks. And now you're going to say, no, James, she does talk. Every now and again, she says something. That's not true. She gets dubbed. Yeah. So that woman does not talk. So for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's like a union thing that she hasn't got her card that means she can't talk or she's too expensive. I'm sure she's not too expensive.
No.
But in this episode, I think more painfully than I've ever noticed before, Picard goes, okay, Ensign, engage. And she does nothing. And then he goes, wah, 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 wah. And it's like, oh dear, what's happened there? And she does not react in the way that you would expect someone to react if the captain was standing behind you and telling you to engage. And and the limitations of having an actual character at con who's actually going to be paid to interact and act was shown, you know, it was pretty clear and pretty bare this week. It was a very poor performance on that front.
Well, because she hits the engage. It looks like it engaged, and then she's dissatisfied, whereas Crusher would have said, you know, Wesley would have said, wait a second, we're not going anywhere. She's just like, okay, do, boing.
And it's like,
as far as she knows, everything's working fine.
It we're not
seems
moving.
To be working good to me. Well, I don't know. Ensign,
press engage again.
And she doesn't say, sir, I did engage. I'll do it again, but I'm telling you, I've been doing this for a while and I engaged.
She seems to be the least interested in her job out of anyone on the Enterprise.
Maybe she just doesn't want to talk back to the captain. You know, although Geordi, what did Geordi do? He actually pushes the captain's hand away. I'm like, here we are in engineering, just like Scotty. Scotty wanted to be helpful. Picard comes into engineering. He wants to be helpful. And he actually pushes his hand away. And then I thought, well, that's a bold move. Would you have pushed Picard's hand away? I mean, Picard wants to press a button. Let him press a button. It's his ship. You don't push his hand away.
Yeah.
But he did. So anyway, yeah, the poor ensign, you know, engage. She did. Nothing happened. Ensign, I said engage. Oh, yeah, well, I might be stupid. Let me try it one more time. Nothing. And she still doesn't talk. So
the
you're
way
right.
That she doesn't even react at all to anything, right? It's like, it's not even, you know, oh, can you do a puzzled look as you go try to press the button twice more? It's not even that. It's like, I'm oblivious in my own little bubble here.
Let's talk about the casting call for that particular role, okay? All these actors have to go before a casting crew, right? To see if they can perform the scene the way they believe it should be. How did this woman win this job? I mean, do you think the rest were worse? Or maybe one of them couldn't help themselves and said, Captain, I did. Okay, thanks. We'll let you know if we want to select you. What was the casting like for her? Okay. Here's what we're going to do. Sit there. Yes. Now I want you to tap like you're engaging in the engines. Okay.
And the weird thing is, right, is that for the last like season and a half, I'm just looking at, no, she's been in it since Sarek.
Is that Ensign Gates?
Yeah. Or, yeah. But she actually ends up, she ends up turning up a lot in like season 6 and season 7 to the extent that I remember watching it the first time round and thinking, oh, they've actually, you know, they've decided they're going to keep the same person you know, they keep the same person there. I was thinking that they were going to go and develop the role a little bit now that, you know, ever since Ensign Roe left, but you see this is a mess. By the way, I've just brought up her memory alpha page, and under memorable quotes, it has, first of all, the S taken off, so it's only memorable quote. And, the memorable quote is, course plotted, sir, from the Pegasus.
Maybe they looped that in, huh? Nice. Okay. So as he's walking again, we see workmen trying to tear up the conduit. And he tries to stop them. But what do? They tear his head off. They tear his arm off. They tear his leg off.
That's in the teaser. We're still in the teaser.
I know. But still. Did you realize at the beginning, just because I did, at the beginning shot of him walking the hall, the way they did the film was so different. I had a feeling that this was some kind of a dream sequence. Did you?
Yeah.
Okay, so it was pretty easy.
So the thing is, I think when you do dreams, if you want to do a dream sequence that you know is a dream going in, then that's fine. If you want to do a dream sequence and shock someone, then it's a dream sequence. You can't red flag it as a dream sequence. And I have to say, I think that I think First Contact does dream sequences really good. So it does this thing where it's clearly a dream sequence, and then Picard wakes up, and then but it's the dream, and then he gets the Borg thing pierced through his cheek. Now that's how to do a dream sequence.
Yes, that was a good one. But so LaForge goes to, after he wakes up, you know, he gets his body torn apart and wakes up like, wow, that was a nightmare. What a nightmare. That's a first for Data to have a nightmare. But here's the thing. He says, Geordi, have you ever had a nightmare? Okay.
He said, nope.
Hell no. Yes, Data. Every time I go to the holodeck, it's a nightmare. But he's...
every time the last, has what's her name been back yet?
Because even the holographic women reject me, Data. That's a nightmare. But he says he's had 111 dreams since he discovered this program. And did I forget something in the past where Data says, Geordi, you're not going to believe this. I was playing around with my programming and I found something I never knew was there. Dreams. When did this come to pass?
It was in Birthright. They had an entire episode on it. The dreams is the thing from Birthright.
Oh my God, I have totally forgotten about that one.
Where he dreamt about his dad and the iron being hit and the bird and all of this stuff, right?
That's right.
They literally have an entire episode of
Star Trek. Oh, man. I totally forgot about that episode. You're right. Now I remember. Okay. But this is the first time he's had a nightmare. Okay. I guess tearing him apart is a nightmare. Okay. So now we get Ensign Tyler. And you said, oh, boy, what was she good for? I first of all, I thought she was cute. Second of all, she's pretty attractive. Third, she's
If you're going to pay someone to say a couple of sentences, pay the ensign on the bridge so it's not so painful. What I mean by what was she for is that she comes in, she has like three or four lines of dialogue, and then she disappears. And then we never hear of her ever again. So the only thing that she adds to the world is that we know that Geordi is clueless with women. Yeah. But when a woman presents herself to Geordi and seems interested in it, Geordi runs away. So I imagine this is just like, what, is this the only known instance of Geordi actually rejecting one of the other, member of the opposite sex?
That's what I'm saying. She's a real woman. She's attractive. And Geordi's pushing her away.
Is she an actress that got this role, or is this a cameo by someone like famous?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that one. I've never seen her before in anything, but
I wouldn't have recognized her.
Let's see here. Phantasm. Let's go back into Memory Alpha. I already gave it up. Oops. No, not cake. Google sent me to the peptide cake.
It's a good... That's another peptide type cake.
Well, Worf liked it, I'm sure. So, Gina Rivera. And let's see what else she has done. Fresh okay. Prince of Bel-Air.
No, she was just an actress.
Just nobody who came on for a few lines. But, she did one good thing. She did get rid of Picard for the Forge. And it was it. What she says to him, I believe, ended up being what, manual labor? Captain, we need help, you know, carrying things or moving things around or something. Oh, yes. Okay. I'm on my way. Let's go.
Oh, okay. I'm going to take it back. You're right. She turns up a little bit later and she prevents Picard hassling engineering, despite Picard never having been down in engineering before to hassle Geordi.
Right. Never.
Why did she end up down? Why did he end up down in engineering? I mean,
well, because they couldn't go to warp. The warp drive kept malfunctioning, and he wanted to get down there because he wants to get to this Admiral's Ball.
Okay, first of all, he didn't want to get to the Admiral's Ball, right?
No.
So he might as well have just gone to the holodeck and gone horse riding. And then the other thing is that it's not the first time that there's been a problem with the warp drive, and we've never seen Picard down in engineering, or I can't recall of a case where he's been, you know, down in engineering. Okay, maybe he doesn't quite like the embarrassment of having to tell the admirals that, you know, his engine broke and they run out of petrol or whatever the equivalent would have been. I found that odd.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there are several plot lines running at the same time. There's no A story and B story. There's several stories, you know, but some of them, you know, Data's dreams of Deanna as a cake. Was that ridiculous or what? Having Deanna's head sticking out of a table with the cake. No, Data, don't do it.
Okay, so I found
poor Marina.
Okay, I found it odd, two things here. One thing is that I thought that the cake looked less good than I remember it. I think it was very clear that it wasn't Troy as a cake, but instead her putting her head up through, through a hole and being put on the end of the cake. The other thing I didn't quite understand is that why did they make it? So what was the dramatic decision? Why was a dramatic decision taken that as he cut the cake, and he wasn't the first to cut the cake, right? Because Worf had already munched on that cake. Right. Why make it so that she's in pain? It just seemed like an odd thing to do dramatically. Mm-hmm. It's like, we're now having to live in the world where Data has got uncontrollable urges to cause to do harm. Maybe that foreshadows the stabby thing on the shoulder, but I just found it slightly out of place in a scene that's it's relatively. Is it played for laughs? It doesn't seem to take itself that seriously, right? At least that particular scene in 10 Forward, and it doesn't seem to be played for with threat in mind. Anyway, I don't know.
And that's funny because I wasn't sure it was made for laughs either. But I mean, but it is kind of funny, especially at the beginning of that scene when you see Worf removing a comm badge from the cake. Obviously, he cut her in that part of her chest, I guess, that the comm badge was still on. He had to remove that so he can eat the cake. And I thought, my God, you know, that's a pretty flat cake, too. Deanna Troi is not a flat woman. But that's irrelevant, too. The whole cake thing is just weird. And then, we haven't even mentioned anything about Beverly sucking something out of Riker's head. I mean, continually with the straw in her mouth. Don't you think these actors looked at this and said, what the hell is this? Okay, so my contribution is to stand here and suck something out of Riker's head?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's exactly right, Gates.
It's a paycheck.
Yeah. Hey, we've already fired you once. Do you want us to do it again? You know, I mean, it's almost like... it's almost like Trump going out of office in the next month. These guys were on borrowed time anyway. They knew it was over. What the hell? What have we got to lose to go out with this farce? And this is a farce. That's what I'm saying. I just don't like this episode. I get the idea that these aliens, they were microbes of something that lived on a component that was used in the warp core, and when the warp core was fired up, all of a sudden they somehow distributed to everybody on the entire ship. They don't say how, How did these beings get to where they were?
And the problem that I have is that it's not even, you know, they don't necessarily have to say how and why and stuff, but I find that what they do explain to us, or what they do decide to focus on, which is, you know, Data dreaming and all of this weird and wonderful thing about interpreting his dreams, I don't find it interesting. So it's, you know, they don't have to tell it from a traditional Trekkie perspective, but the absence of doing it makes you question why, and then you start asking, well, is it better that they did it this way? And I kind of felt that it wasn't as good. So what they lose by not explaining, I don't think they gain from like an artistic perspective. So you know, if you think about Far Beyond the Stars in DS9, you know, so the one where it's, you know, Benny Russell.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff. Now, that's a really odd episode in that it's set in a very, you know, it's almost entirely set in a parallel universe. You can read into it in many different ways. It's normally, on the face of it, like a vision that Sisko would have had from the prophets. But I kind of think that what they do with the creative decision, so, you know, in asking the audience to, okay, look, just hold on a minute, we want some artistic freedom to do something, I think what they did in that episode was very interesting. Whereas here, it feels like they say, okay, we want some artistic freedom to do something. Now, wouldn't it be good if Troy was a cake? And it's like, what? Is that all it is? Mm. And I don't think they didn't earn the, you know, the kookiness. Now,
no.
I think I had the same issue with Frame of Mind, by the way. You know, the Riker episode where he's in the insane asylum, that's all very...
Yes.
I think that they, you know, when they step into that type of territory, I do think they need to work hard for it. And I just don't think they did it justice this week.
No. No. You think this could be the equivalent of a bottle episode?
A what episode?
Bottle episode, you know, where they're low budget. Maybe they spent too much and they need something cheap. I mean, it seems fairly...
I mean, I think fundamentally most of season 7 is a bottle episode.
Yeah, that's true. You're right there.
There's not a... And obviously, of course, we're coming on the back of a... excuse me. We're coming on the back of that two-parter, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing about two-parters as well, it's that it's also relatively cheap. It's, you know, it's not twice the... It's relatively cheap to get a two-parter in, because you don't have to design two lots of sets, you don't have to find two lots of actors, etc., right? So you know, having a double episode is also relatively cheap, and especially with Gambit, I think they had something on location on the first one but nothing in the second. So it's I think this season in general is relatively cheap.
Well, like I said, it's their last season. They're contracted to finish these, so what's the point if, you know, they're not gonna give them their best work, because it's not gonna mean anything. So yeah, you're right. Season 7 is mostly phoned in. I had an ET moment there, but yeah, phoned in, I guess you could say.
Phone home.
No, I think Gene probably would have had a problem with this season.
Well, I mean, if Gene didn't have a problem with TOS season 3, I'm not entirely sure he would have had a problem with this.
Did they know then that they were going out after season 3, or were they expecting a season 4 and were disappointed?
No, I think when they put in the death slot, I think they got the season 3, but where it was placed in the schedule and stuff meant that it wasn't going to be going ahead. And I think, you know, look, the other thing that happens, right, is that... you know, we like the TV show, we like the stories that they tell, et cetera. But when they greenlight a project, and it happened also with The Wrath of Khan, you know, when they greenlight a project and they cut your budget from the previous outing, or they cut it in half, or whatever it might be, you know, there's the guys on the other end are only human, right? And they can, you know, it's hard to stay engaged when you're having... you know, the budget of the show being cut. And I think that the budget of TOS season 3 was hugely cut on the previous seasons. You know, if you've not had a pay rise in 7 years and you're working on TNG, you know, how are you feeling after the, you know, after the 150th episode doing the same thing.
Right. Yeah. Right. Makes sense. Yeah. Okay, so we have Data sleeping, and he oversleeps. 35 minutes, he's late. And so what do? They dispatch Troy, Worf, and LaForge to break into his apartment and find out what's going on. So that terrifies Data. Like, this doesn't make sense. Why would I possibly oversleep? So what's he do? He goes for some diagnostic tests in the holodeck, where we have Sigmund Freud attempting to analyze his dreams. And his expert opinion is he's experiencing a classic dismemberment dream. Or, as things go along, he keeps changing his theory. Then it's a dismantlement dream. And also he has an unconscious desire to possess his mother. And, oh, the knife. Oh, yeah, yeah. Sexual inadequacy. But since he has no sexual desire, oh, impotence. I don't think Sigmund Freud was that bad, was he? Or I mean, did he go from one theory to another as you talk to him? I don't know.
Okay, so I got the impression that this was these lines were written by someone that was a lot happier about how they turned out than I thought he should be.
Yeah.
So I kind of like feel like it's like, I did a course on psychology at college and I covered Freud. So let me write this down. And I think I got the impression that the writer was very pleased with himself. Now, I'm probably being very unfair, but it feels a bit too, that this particular exchange feels a bit too tight for it to be true.
Yeah. And Deanna was right, you know, maybe when you're going to seek help, why don't you come to me instead of Freud? I don't know. How easy would it have been for Data to go see Deanna after he had already cut her cake? That might have been a strange. And who else had that happen, too? How about Barclay?
Mm-hmm.
Barclay's like making love to her in the holodeck as a knight or something, and now he has to go see her and talk about his problems. How's that supposed to go? So, was she right? Should Data have actually gone to her instead of Freud?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, isn't it by the time that Troy speaks to him for more than like a couple of minutes, she already turns into the, are you sure this isn't like a technological question that I can't deal with? So I'm not entirely sure that Troy is really the right person to be dealing with Data, given the Data is so different.
Okay. So why Freud then? I mean, can the computer actually take what Freud was about and actually come up with an adequate representation of him to give sound psychological advice?
Well, okay, so if the computer can do that with the medical hologram, right, for actual proper medicine,
yeah,
then sure, maybe.
Mm.
I don't know. It is odd though that you do have like an emergency medical hologram, but you don't have an emergency counselor. Maybe that's what they should have invested in.
It would have been pretty easy for them to just incorporate a counselor's program right onto him as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, yeah, you're right. But he was programmed with the medical knowledge of thousands of doctors, and what I mean by that is not the minute-per-minute thoughts of the doctors and how they thought their thought processes. It's, okay, there's a broken leg. Now let's think about all these doctors and how they would fix this broken leg to come up with the proper treatment. That's what I thought the EMH was.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy of just one psychologist or psychiatrist, Sigmund Freud, and the computer thinks it's capable. Well, it doesn't think. It tried its best of what this doctor would diagnose based on the complaint and the symptoms of patients exhibiting. I don't think that's possible. I don't think they, in the future, we're not going to have a holographic image of Dr. Freud to help us with our problems. Or Dr. Phil. Or Sally Jesse Raphael. Or any of these people that are there to help people with their problems. I don't see a computer being able to redo that.
So, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay. So Picard doesn't even want to go to the Admiral banquet, but he's acting like he does. Although, I'm not so sure that's true. I think because he's done 6 years, he's put it off for 6 years, but 6 years of excuses as to why he couldn't make it. I think he was right when he said, they're not going to listen to this. They're not going to believe this. And as it turns out, he didn't. Admiral what? Nakamura was his name, I believe?
Yeah, Nakamura. Yep. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he didn't believe him at all. You could see it in his face. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, how long for this one? Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, we expect you here. Especially when he says, do you need me to get a ship to tow you to the starbase? That's demoralizing.
You should have said, yeah, if you could. If you could, please actually, send one.
Yeah, actually, Admiral, that might be a good idea. No, that's not what he says. No, that is not what we need. Yes, you do. But, you know, just when they think they have it fixed, and sure enough, the nacelles light up, right? Engage. The nacelles light up. It starts to do its little spin, and everything shuts off. That was pretty funny as well, actually. Everything just flashed. You get the flash of the warp nacelles, and boom, everything turns off. What do you think LaForge was going through, saying, "Oh, geez, he's going to replace me. I can feel it coming."
By the way, where were they? They were near the starbase, right? So to me, it feels like, because they started at the starbase, or, you know, space dock from Search for Spock. You would imagine that they would have replaced the warp core there, not in the middle of space somewhere. So would it really have taken that long? I mean, where's the Admiral's dinner? Is it at base at the starbase? Is that where it is? Mm-hmm. Or did they have to go to another system?
Don't know. No, they don't really say that. To me, it looks like they're just dangling there in space somewhere.
It does. I mean, other than the first, like, you know, scene, it feels like they're in the middle of space somewhere.
Yeah. Because he said, we're adrift. And they were. They were just adrift. Now, that raises another point. Let's say the ship stops. It's in space. There's no air. There's no outside influence. Why was the ship slowly spinning?
Huh?
When they showed the outside view of the ship after the flash when... Okay.
And it was spinning?
Yeah, it was slightly spinning.
It can still spin. But it has a bit of inertia, that's all. It can spin.
Okay. I would have thought when they stop, they actually stop. Dead. Stop.
I mean, not necessarily. It can keep spinning. As long as there's a bit of inertia when they stop, or quote-unquote stop, because they're not technically stopping, right? They are... And they're nearly stopping. But it should be okay.
Okay. All right. So now not only does Data have his dream sequence while he's in bed, now his dream sequence is taking over while he's on duty or while he's awake. And it causes him to stab Troy in the shoulder, like we say.
Okay, I have to say that the scene where she's in the turbo lift and she goes into the turbo lift and then you see out of nowhere, like a hand come in and pull it back. What the hell? Is that acceptable? Is that what you're allowed to do?
No.
Are you allowed to put a hand in to stop a lift?
No,
didn't seem right.
No. Cause I mean, you know, obviously you're gambling that the sensors in the door is actually going to see you or not. And, oh, hell, what if your hand was in there and it just kept on shutting and then the lift takes off and takes your fingers along with it? Who knows? It makes no sense at all. Nobody, but people do that. They do it with their legs, you know, kick the leg in there just in case, and it usually opens back up, or their hand, but it made no sense. But here's another question. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you finish that thought.
So putting your leg in is okay, because I think your leg's not going to be chopped off completely, but I think your fingers are slightly more painful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you never know. Your leg gets caught in the door and the door shuts and all of a sudden it's taking off. It's taking off and it's taking your leg with it. If your leg got caught between these doors, well, I don't know if the elevator doors are so tight or so, you know, put together with force that your leg couldn't force it back open, or your hands, because your leg's going to cause a gap. Can your hands then open up the rest of the way or not? Well, I would think that they would want the doors to automatically come back open if there's any resistance whatsoever. However, as we both know, machines break, and in the worst possible time, that's when it's going to not engage its safety protocol, and next thing you know, you've got a limb sitting inside a door that's all of a sudden destroyed when the elevator takes it. It's possible, I would say. Doesn't happen often, but I'm sure it's possible. But what made Deanna so scared as she was walking along? This wasn't in Data's dream or anything. This wasn't a dream of Deanna. This was the actual person of Deanna walking through this corridor like it was haunted. Why would she have been reacting in that way at all?
No, I'm not sure.
Especially since it's an android. Now, if it was Worf lurking around there and about ready to stab her, yeah, I could see where she may have some concerns that this feels wrong, but not Data. Mm-hmm. So she must have some kind of sixth sense on anything that could happen. Too bad they never exploited that for a little more later. So Data stabs Worf, must relieve him of duty. Return him to his quarters. And of course it takes Worf and two security officers to take him to his quarter. I was thinking, you might want to have more people along. And then they have their phasers inside their belts. You know, don't you think Data could take them all down within a 1.2 second?
Oh, I mean, yes, but this isn't, they're not really doing this because, you know, that full-on protocol here, that's what it is, right?
Right,
So they kind of, they know he's not being thrown in the brig. You know, to be honest with you, if people were actually assessing the risk that Data runs, you'd probably ask him to be in the brig when he's not on duty, just because mm-hmm. of the number of times he's just gone off on one and taken over the ship. So he's too dangerous really to live a normal life, right?
That's what I thought. I wondered that same question. Why didn't they put him in the brig? Put him behind a force field. At least they have a half a shot of stopping him.
But doesn't do anything wrong, though, right?
No, I wouldn't. He just stabs Deanna. And that raises
He's already done that.
Yeah, he's already done that. But that raises another question. It's Worf and Riker who stumble upon Deanna's stabbed body and Data over her with the knife. And they're able to actually stop him.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that a little strange? That an android with superhuman strength, you know, 100 times what they could do, even the Klingon, and they were all able to hold him back.
No, you're right. You're right. Data's stronger than both of them.
Or maybe, you know, Data at that point woke up and said, holy crap, what's going on here? What did I do? Okay, well, it's time to put him in his quarters. And Worf says, I'm going to need your sidearm. I don't know about the police in your area, the bobbies, I guess, but over here, when somebody is going to, when a police comes into your home and they know you have guns, they're not going to say, oh, by the way, could you go ahead and walk over there to where that gun is, pick it up and hand it to me, please? That sounds like a very bad tactical thing to do. They're going to not want you anywhere within reach of that gun. But that's what Data does. He walks, oh, yeah, okay. I'll just walk over here, grab it, and here you go. Okay. Maybe I'm wrong there. But Data does do the nice good thing and says, oh, would you take Spot? Oh, God. Is this the only time that Worf has had to deal with Spot? I didn't think so.
I seem to remember another interaction. And I thought that I thought we had already reviewed this scene. I thought we had spoken about this scene before. So I'm afraid I don't know. I've messed this up with another scene, for example.
I think I have it, though, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. There was another scene with Riker. Riker had an issue with the cat, because at one time
he had the big scratch over his head.
Yeah, so at one point he walks into his quarters and he stops and he turns his head like this and says, "Where's that cat?" Oh, Spot's sleeping. You can come in now. I think that's where we're confusing the two up.
Maybe.
Riker and Worf. Because I said, wait a second, Worf has already had an issue with him. Okay. So, we've already talked about Worf holding the cat, and, you know, but like I say, there's instructions. He will need to be fed once a day. He prefers supplement number 25, not 47, 25. I found that funny. He requires water, a sandbox, casual conversation to let him know he's a pretty cat and a good cat.
Yeah.
But Worf says, "I will feed him."
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Wouldn't it have been funnier if Worf had said, "You're a pretty cat"? The Klingon giving a cat his best conversation, you know? "Come with me, Spot." You can't do that. It's not a dog. He goes and picks him up, hands him to Worf, and Worf has got his hands around him. And I thought, oh, don't squeeze, Worf. Don't squeeze. And on his way out the door, what's he do? He sneezes. That was good.
I like this interaction. Yeah, this was good. Yeah.
But then, what happens after that? Nothing. Why? I mean, if they were going to talk so much about the phone ringing, Crusher sucking something out of Riker's head, why couldn't we get 2 minutes of Worf bringing this cat home, putting him down on the ground, and then getting pissed as the cat jumps on all his stuff? That would have been fun.
You can't get cats to do that, though. Cats don't do that on demand.
You are absolutely right. And I'm finding that out since my daughter brought a cat into this house.
Yeah, the cats do what they want to do. There's no ticket orders here.
Yeah, get off our table. Put him down. Back on the table. Huh. All right. Get down! And of course, that scares a cat and it jumps down. But you're right. Cats will do what they want to do when they want to do it. All right, so. I don't know if we've covered pretty much everything or enough of it or what. Is there anything that I'm missing?
No, not really. I mean, so you have this thing where they plug him into the holodeck.
I forgot about that. Go on.
The Geordi and Picard kind of look at him, wander around, but they kind of solve the problem extremely quickly and extremely easily, right? And they also do have the least impactful shot at point blank range into Freud, where they go bang and he goes, "Ugh!" And it's like something from a children's drama class.
Okay. So now it's making more sense when we put that together, because Freud saying kills them all. We weren't sure if he meant the humans or the aliens. Obviously he meant the aliens, so the alien had to come in and shut him up.
Well,
that makes more sense. That makes more sense. Okay, good. Now I feel better about it. And like I said, the solution was the high shrieking, shrilling noise through the entire ship. And it just eliminates the creatures. We don't see dead creatures fall into the ground or anything. Did they explain why they were phased or cloaked in some way?
Not really, right? Not beyond the fact that you know, Crusher does a bit of a data dump when they discover them for the first time.
Yeah.
And there's no, what are they, you know, they say, well, we've eradicated them. And yeah, I'm thinking, okay, like, just kill them all.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
Maybe another minute on how it happens, all these creatures. I would have liked these creatures unfazing or coming into our reality and then falling and burning up or just falling and dying. Next thing you know, we got to get somebody with the broom and dustpan to sweep them all up and put them somewhere. I don't know. I would have liked a little more information on that.
Like collect them all up and set them on fire or something.
Right. But you realize Star Trek and another franchise pretty much rehashes this thing again.
Okay, so which one are you thinking of? Because I think they do it a fair number of times.
It could be, but I'm thinking of Voyager when they have
these... Scientific method.
Scientific method.
But they have to go into the black hole. That is an awesome episode, by the way.
It was.
I think that one's so great because they have this mystery where people are... They start getting headaches and they start getting really run down and you don't know what it's about. And then you realize that there's, you know, that episode, they were having experiments conducted upon them, right?
Yep.
And they were just not, they didn't know they were having this experiment on them. Whereas Phantasms is just, oh, there happens to be a bit of a plague in your warp core. So it's kind of different. There's no motivation here, which is why I find it very hard to even be interested in these little mice that get exterminated.
Oh, right, exactly. Yes, because of the fact of the rash. Deanna had the rash that made her look at this with a different light and, oh, what do we got here? And then they start looking at the other crew and, oh, there's one there. Oh, hey, Riker, there's yours. That's exactly where I saw you sucking something out of his head. So, at which Beverly said, well, that's better than what I was doing last night.
She did not say that.
No, she
anyway,
didn't.
By the way, just before anyone mentions, look, they did do the thing about both the cake and also the straw as symbols of, you know, someone ingesting and eating away, mm-hmm. and these yeah. things are technically eaten away at us. I don't think that's a strong enough connection to hang the entire story and these visions on. So I don't know why, you know, why does it's not enough, right? Why does Riker have the straw? Just because someone's eaten away at his brain there?
Yeah, right.
It's, you know.
It was...
Whatever.
It was 38 minutes of build-up and 4 minutes of the problem that got solved too quickly and too easily. I think maybe all the build-up wasn't necessary. In fact, get rid of a lot of the build-up. Identify the creatures by the midpoint. And then maybe lose an ensign somewhere as he gets dissolved to dust. And that's going to happen to all of us if we don't figure this out. And then they spend the last half of the episode figuring it out. We didn't need the ringing phone inside Data's body. I'm not sure. A lot of this, and you, like you said, ensign, what's-her-face? Tyler. I think we could have saved her for another episode and expanded on why she likes Geordi. Because for the life of me, I'm not sure why.
Nope. All scientific evidence suggests that she shouldn't.
No. So I would have liked to have more time with her. And obviously, you know, he turned her into HR. And they obviously did something about it and reassigned her to another ship. Because we never see her. Yeah, exactly.
No, we never see her. No, she was dropped back up at space dock as the credits rolled.
Yes. Yeah, she's the Robin Leffler. But then again, Robin at least had another episode, didn't she? One or two?
Yeah, she had a couple. She had the game and...
Yeah.
And something else.
Yeah, she did. I'm not always great at the names, but, you know, and of course, I liked her too, but that's a different story to this altogether as well. But, okay. Well, I guess that's it. Now, you got to admit, James, that the way we do this one and the last couple is better than just me reading this off word by word by word for each act and then trying to talk about it. I like the way we're doing this now. So, and the year 2023, when we begin DS9, that's probably the way we should do it.
I doubt we'll get the DS9 so soon.
You might be right. No, I don't know.
We've only got 20 episodes left of this season.
Yeah, yeah.
We should be able to do that this year.
Oh yeah, we'll finish it.
It's this coming year.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll make All Good Things a Christmas special for 2021.
No, we can make All Good Things like a convention special.
Oh really? For Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's more ambitious.
We just got to find somebody there who's willing to tell the crowd about us and that our show just ended and our RSS feed isn't quite working the way it should. If it wasn't for the Lou Trek Show feed, nobody would know we're even doing this. So hopefully Mark can get that fixed, like he said. And I don't know how many people hung on or got rid of it as a dead podcast. We'll have to see. So, okay, that's it. So it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. James, how about you? I always go first. You go first this time.
Okay, actually, I really didn't know where I was going to come in on this episode today, because I hadn't thought about a scale. I'm thinking a 2. I think a 2 is okay. It's not... So it is a car crash or an episode. It doesn't work. It asks you to have this really weird, like, non-Star Trek-y hour, and it doesn't do much with it, in my mind. You do end up with, you know, Troy's a cake, the cellular peptide cake with mint frosting, and you end up with I Will Feed Him with the cat. I think that's all you take away from this episode as positives. As negatives, maybe it has some nice imagery as well, maybe, if that's what you're into, but I think it's like skin deep. It's all surface here, and I don't particularly think there's a more interesting story behind it. Unless I'm going to repeat myself, I think it's really like a 2 out of 5. And the 2 is coming from a couple of these, you know, iconic lines that we can look at this episode, and it's crazy enough that you can chuckle at the episode. It's not just like a boring episode that has, you know, it swings and misses, right? Rather than doesn't swing.
Right.
And you give it an, you know, I bump it up for that at least.
Okay.
And it wasn't the worst episode of Star Trek I saw this week, because I saw Discovery this week. Anyway, I'll leave that one there. Did you see Discovery this week?
No, I have not seen the last one. Okay. I saw last week's where...
Last week's one was not good either. I think last week's one was the worst of so far, and this week's one is really pretty bad. And they do a similar thing, by the way, in Discovery. So the episode of Discovery I'm talking about is the one where they go back to the Mirror Universe again. And the way they get to the Mirror Universe is that they literally say, we've got a magic door. Would you like to walk through the magic door? And that's not how Star Trek does stuff. We don't go through magic doors. Even when you do have a magic door, and I appreciate that the Iconians had a magic door and the Guardian of Forever had a magic door. I understand that. But we don't go through magic doors. We scan them first, and then we go that there's a temporal distortion, and then you walk through the magic door. And not doing that is a crime. Anyway, I'm going to leave that. Enjoy Star Trek Discovery this week, and we can talk about it next week, Lou.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, there's more things about Star Trek Discovery we can come up with, like the Spore Drive and why Starfleet didn't make that its only means of transportation. I mean... when you can blink your eye and poof, you're there. Poor Geordi. We don't need him no more. Yeah. But maybe we'll talk about that another day. So for this one, you know, I have to be honest. Like I said, the episode kind of confused me a little bit. Is it good or not? To me, it's a very tough call. It is a car crash. In fact, go to YouTube and say, snowy car pile up. and then watch a few, and then you'll understand what we mean by this is a car crash. It's got an interesting premise. I think it could have been done differently, but I don't know. I think Patrick Stewart was given what he was given, and he did. He made the best of it. He tried to make some parts funny, and he did. He made some parts visually interesting, the way they were put together. But as far as the story, it doesn't save it at all. We don't see Worf again after taking the cat. And let's face it, Alexander was trouble. What was that cat like? Oh, we've missed out on that one. Symbolism of eating Data, or I'm sorry, eating Deanna. And in the end, she's in the, she says, oh, we did miss, we mentioned it a little bit, but, you know, Deanna walks into Data's quarters with this pan, and we know it's a cake. She says, turnabout is fair play. And we look at this ugly looking cake, and she hands him the knife. And I was thinking, you know, he just stabbed her. Is she comfortable with that? Well,
I think she's going to get stabbed again.
Yeah, who knows? I might have been a little bit once bitten, twice shy, but who knows? But it does look like a loaf of bread knife. So unless he's going to slice her across her throat, it doesn't look like one that could cause a lot of harm. However, I did notice that when he was holding it, the blades were up instead of down.
It was up, wasn't it? Yes. It was not the. It was a relatively blunt blade. But it was an upside down blade, yeah.
Yeah, that to me looks like a knife you would use to slice bread. That's what it seemed to me.
No, but it wasn't even bread. It was like it wasn't even butter. It was like a knife you would use to get icing onto a cake. It was like a caking knife.
Oh, okay. That could be. It could be. She just wiped it off and brought it. But, yeah. But he doesn't even cut the cake. So it's a good thing, you know, he didn't put his thumb on the blade part. But, yeah, it was upside down. I thought that was kind of strange. By the way,
have you ever done that? I've held a knife upside down, and I've put my thumb on it. Not a good thing to happen.
No. Or like if you have a pizza cutter and you put your thumb down, and as you're cutting the pizza, that's slicing your thumb. You get that for a couple seconds. Ouch. That hurts.
Yep. Yep.
That hurts.
I've got the Enterprise pizza cutter, by the way.
Oh, well, so do I.
And that one is, it's not the best pizza cutter for people who do not want their thumbs to be cut.
Absolutely.
The way you hold it, you naturally have your thumb over the saucer section, which is a blade.
Yes. We must have the exact same one. Yes, especially since the saucer section wiggles too. It jiggles too much.
It does.
And you can hear it jingle, 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 jingle as it's wiggling. And you're right. It's a strange cutter. It's almost like it was never meant to cut pizza. It was just supposed to be used as a prop or something you hang from the ceiling as a ship. I don't know. It's cute though. I think my wife got it for me.
But it works. It certainly cuts.
Yeah, you get your hand around those nacelles and make sure your thumb is on the body instead of the saucer, and it does cut. It's a good cutter.
Just to be clear, you have the Enterprise rather than the Enterprise D, because there are two variants of this. You've got the Constitution, not the Galaxy class.
I believe so.
Okay.
Yes, I do believe so. I'll have to look at that. I'll confirm that next week, but I do believe so. So the constant ringing of the old-style telephone was meaningless. Kids today will be looking at that going, wow, what's that? Creatures are manifesting themselves as workmen in Data's dream. Also seems a little disjointed. Their whole goal is to just beat the warp core to crap. It's almost, as this was going on, I thought, they're trying to stop the warp core from working because it's killing their young. But we've already been through something like that. I don't know why they would rehash that. But that wasn't it at all. That's just the way it seemed. So maybe like you said, you know, I have to watch it a couple more times. Maybe I need to fall asleep and think about what I was seeing and then go at it again. No, I think I'm done with it. In the end, it's not really a great episode. It's not one I really get into. But like I say, it's not terrible. I was torn between a 2 and a 3. I couldn't get it. I thought some of the parts were funny. But in the end, they do symbolically, you know, they get to eat Deanna and having her at sick bay with the side boob hanging out. Is that enough? No, it's not enough to push it into a 3. You're absolutely right on this one. Even Data stabbing her, you would think, ah, oh, that's got to be worth something there. It's not. It's not. I'm sorry. The story just ruins it for me. And so I'm with you. Best I could give is a pretty medium to low 2. So that is that.
Awesome. I think that's good. That's good. And unfortunately, Lou, while you were talking, I Googled the Enterprise pizza cutter. And really odd. And there must be something to do. It must be something to do with Christmas, because at the moment they have them on Amazon in the UK for £130, which will be over $150.
No
and,
way.
And yeah, and I'm pretty sure I paid like $30, no more than that. And it's $150 on Amazon at the moment.
Well, so, I've got one here from Think Geek, Star Trek Enterprise Pizza Cutters, $34.99.
Yep, that's the one.
Yep, that's but exactly it, the on, one I've got.
It looks like there's some surge pricing going on Amazon UK, at least.
Oh, that's not nice. But you're right.
You should hold off.
Oh, or I'll just buy it and send it to you, but you already got one. Yeah. Or, yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'll put maybe I could put a link to this Enterprise pizza cutter.
We're sponsored by Think Geek.
Yeah, there you go. Think Geek. So, yeah, this show is brought to you by Think Geek. But you're right. No, I don't think I could use them as a sponsor, because really this thing is a very bad pizza cutter. I think it's meant solely for look and not for actual practical use. So, okay, guys, I got to get going. I've got a half hour to be in position to work tonight. So we're good. Anything else, Doc?
Join us again next week as we review episode 7 of season 7, which is Dark Page. And it is the last time we see Roxana Troi in TNG. So,
wait a minute. Now I know this. Oh, well, that's going to give it automatic point increase just to have Roxana Troi. But I do remember this now. Huh?
All the way up to 1, then.
Yeah, so far, she's at a 1. No, I remember this now. This is kind of creepy, but it was
Okay, I'll put it this way, by the way. I have not seen Dark Page whilst a parent. So I haven't seen it in the last 15 years. I don't have any recollection of having seen it as a parent. And now I'm a parent. So maybe the story is awesome, and I just didn't appreciate it as a young pipsqueak.
That makes sense. I think you might be right, because quite frankly, my memory of the last time I've seen this episode, I kind of thought it was, you know, it was started out stupid, but eventually, as we get into the meat of the story, I thought maybe it was done really well, and it's sad, and that's what I think, you know, makes it what it is. So, well, we are going to talk about that, and we're slated to have another guest on, and I think this mind might be there. I don't know. He might do it. He might. Do you want me to tell you who it is?
Oh, no. Leave it as a surprise. And don't fool people out if they haven't confirmed in 4.5 months.
That is so true. You never know what people are busy doing. So, okay. Yes. So join us for Dark Page. And everyone, thank you for downloading, and have a good night.
Good night.